Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to season two of Nerdy Notions.
The long-awaited.
Sasha Kaplan's.
The long-awaited, much-anticipated, and unprecedented season two of Nerdy Notions. What will happen? Who will we destroy? And more importantly, will our negative 120 followers ever shrink into the positives?
Never.
I think we can do it.
Let's wait until about 2023 when we're able to have conventions again at this point.
Valid. Let's hope it doesn't take until 2023. But anyway, I mean, you know, would be fun to spend my 30th birthday as like coming out of the like cave of isolation into the convention floors, but let's hope it happens earlier.
I mean, I spent my entire 34th birthday essentially on Twitch playing video games.
Hope I can have a better birthday than that. Anyway.
I mean, hey, at least I was entertained and I got to at least, you know, quote, hang out with my friends.
Hey, I managed to have an entire birthday party before they shut everything down. So anyway, what are we doing for season two? Gosh.
Well, if you look at the archive, there are 11 episodes already titled.
And they're so funny titles. Like, I don't know what we could possibly be talking about. But anyway.
I mean, it's only given away on the first title.
Maybe we should fix that when this is actually posted so they can actually figure it out. But no, if you've made it this far, then we're going to tell you. We are diving into a very sore subject. A subject that was the defining moment of my childhood. The reason I got into the comic book superhero genre in the first place, and the bane of my existence in the present. We are talking about the X-Men. And not X-Men the Animated Series, to which I credit my entire love of nerdy things, but we are talking about the movies and why I hate Bryan Singer with intense and passion of a thousand suns. And want him to never touch an X-related property for as long as I live. Note, not as long as he lives, as long as I live. That means no ghosts, no cameos, no mentions ever, ever, ever. But we're not on the hate Singer train yet. We're going to go back to the land of yesteryear. A time before Sasha ever came to America. A time where New York existed. A time where we had a different president. A time around the time my brother was born. I don't even know how else to describe this. But basically, we're talking about 2000, specifically the first X-Men film, which actually came out. This is like the first, I argue this is the first truly superhero film of the Marvel Universe. I do not count Blade Fight Me.
Except for the fact that Blade opened the door for almost everything.
I know, but Blade sucks. I'm sorry. Like, no, I get it.
Blade is great. The second Blade is okay. The third Blade was just, I think, a paycheck for Wesley Snipes and to also give a launch pad for Ryan Reynolds.
Okay, so they should have just stopped at one. Got it. Anyway, I'm not a big fan of... I'm vampire intolerant. Like, I fully admit that. So I can't with all of these movies. I can't.
If it wasn't for Blade 2, Donnie Yen would have been able to make the effective jump over to the United States. I'm going to throw that out there.
Again, I have no problem with the effects that this had for other people opening the door for the X-Men films and other superhero movies. I understand its value and how it helped to make other people's careers. I am just vampire intolerant. I'm not disregarding the value that Blade had. I just don't personally like it. That's really the end of it, and I don't want to talk about it. I find it boring. That's just it. I can't handle any single...
Puts Blade on the Nerdy Notions schedule. Got it.
you know, I'm starting to think maybe it's time for a solo career where Mike just kind of ends up stabbed in a ditch. Anyway... I want to talk about the X-Men because the X-Men were first created by Jack Kirby with input from Stan Lee, but largely by Jack Kirby, as is everything else, to they created a group of people that were different from us. And that difference led to misunderstandings and persecution. And they were different physically and mentally and genetically because they were mutants. They had powers. The X-Men, for those that might not know, was created as an allegory for...
Social injustice.
Yes, I'm glad you used the word social injustice, because the X-Men were not strictly created as an allegory for civil rights or gay rights or anything like that. They were specifically, they were created to be an allegory for everybody. Yes, when they were created in the 60s, there was the influence of the civil rights movements, which definitely had a lot of influence in the X-Men comics, but they weren't created to be a sole allegory. They are an allegory for everyone. Personally, as a tiny Jewish girl, I heavily identified with the X-Men. Anybody who is part of a marginalized group, anybody that has ever faced injustice can relate to the X-Men. And that's kind of the beauty of the X-Men, except in current comics. Anyway, let's dive in. I want to talk a little bit, I guess we should talk about the beginning, the film itself, before we dive into all of the behind the scenes and shenanigans and all the cool facts I found out about it. So are you ready, Mike?
Sure, go for it.
We open in the ye olden days of 1944. Well, there's like this cool, well, we'll get to that. Anyway, where's my first note here? So actually it starts with like that the mutation, it's like this like voiceover as we get through the theme.
The voiceover, like, Patrick Stewart.
Yes, Sir Patrick Stewart. About how mutation is the key to evolution of the dominant species, yada yada yada. The evolution, but like what if evolution like leaped forward, and then we see the X door. But you know, after this theme, it sounds like, oh, this is gonna be kind of a fun scientific-esque film, and then we end up in Poland in 1944, where very clearly marked Jews are marching into a concentration camp, and you know, people are being separated, and there's this kid who's marching with his parents, and he gets separated, and for some reason no one really notices, because he kind of gets pushed aside, and none of the like Nazis that are around really do anything with that. It's kind of unclear where exactly it happened, but the young man, like, he's not quite in the young men line, but he tries to get back to his parents. That's when the Nazis are holding him back, which, like, it, the way this is shot makes it a little bit disorienting to fully understand what is happening. But anyway, apparently three Nazis cannot hold back this kid. And we see that he ends up kind of like crushing the gate before he ultimately gets knocked out amidst rain and dirt and everything. So now we flash forward from the past to the future, to the land of Mississippi.
Yeehaw.
At least he didn't do the Roll Tide. Anyway, a girl has a boy in her room while her mother plays the piano. Scandalous. And she talks about traveling and what she wants to do after high school. And then her and the boy start kissing. And then the boy doesn't take it well. And so these are like rogue sort of parents. I will go into why sort of parents at the end. But anyway, she basically, this is the part where like some of the movie's faults come into play, where like the boy starts passing out because he had physical contact with Rogue, and they just kind of, the parents like fly into the room and they just kind of assume that Rogue did it as she's crying and huddling in the room saying, I just kissed him. Like, how do you go from like, the kid is literally having like quote unquote a seizure, like what could she possibly do? Like, this is not yet a world where it doesn't seem to me that it's a world where mutants are kind of running rampant. They exist and there's talk of them, but there's no like assumption that like somebody on the street, you know, could be a mutant. But anyway, we flash further to Congress. Jean is addressing Congress and Senator Kelly asks, are mutants dangerous? Kelly has the names of mutants that can walk through walls, a girl in Chicago that can walk through walls, and there's even mutants that control minds. I wonder, timeline, because, like, we see a version of Kitty later on, if this was, like, if, like, I don't know, did they pick up Kitty on the way to the summit and then, like, take her to school, or, like, or does Kelly not know that she's at the school, which is entirely possible, but... How does he know? Where did he find out these things about the mutants? Anyway, so there's these mutants that can control minds. Hello, Charles Xavier. So it's very clear to me already, based on the characters at play, that this is actually based more off of the cartoon than the comics. Yeah, there's like some key players missing, like Blob and like... Juggernaut and things like that, but you do have kind of the main players, which is like Jean and Scott and Charles and Eric and that sort of thing. So we see Charles Xavier, a bald guy who sees another guy with a hat, as people applaud the senators lamenting about the Mutant Registration Act, because, you know, politicians are useful. Bald guy sees a so he calls him Eric. Eric is played by Sir Ian McKellen. That says that, like, Eric's basically given up on humanity. And that the mutants are the next step in evolution, harkening back to that opening, theme, I guess, for lack of a better word. So we get the kind of implication that they already know each other and that they used to be friends. And he says that mutants are the future. So then we get to Canada. It's Canada, right? I think they said it was Canada. Basically, there's the Don't Touch Me Girl, which technically has not been named yet.
I love Don't Touch Me Girl. Don't Touch Me Girl.
Right. Well, she doesn't have a name yet.
And honestly, they never really clarify if they're in Canada or not. For all we know, because it's winter time, it could be Minnesota.
I think they said it was Canada because they said it was Mississippi when it was Mississippi, and they said it was Poland when it was Poland. Anyway.
I don't think they ever clarified that one. They actually said what city they went to, which wasn't much of a city, but I don't think they ever clarified if it was Canada or still in the United States.
I think it was Canada. I'm pretty sure. Anyway, the girl arrives in a small, awkward-looking Canadian town, which consists of mostly just, like, a bar. And at some civilization that probably exists outwards. So she arrives at this bar, and she, you know, a nice trucker gave her a ride. And there's, like, a brawl going on, and we hear metal clanking, which is kind of foreshadowing. And we hear some grunting noises from Hugh Jackman. This is kind of, like, the end of the night. This girl's kind of eyeing the tip jar because she has no money. And then we see Wolverine. Meanwhile, there's talk of this UN summit, which is going to be the largest gathering of world leaders, and they're all going to be discussing the issue of mutants. Will we actually ever see discussing the issue of mutants? Survey says no. No, we won't.
Maybe.
No. Never. Never. No, the closest we get is this, like, Senate. It was the, like, Senate subcommittee, whatever it was. That is as close as we will get, at least in this movie. So, Wolverine basically fights with this guy, and he wins, and he gets money for that. But the dude is, like, kind of a sore loser. So the guy who lost knows who Wolverine is, or what he is, I guess, a mutant. And the girl goes after Wolverine. She grabs her stuff and she, like, hides in his little, like, what's it called? Like, he has a truck with, like, a hatch up of, like,
she essentially hides in the bed of the truck.
No, she doesn't. She ends up in the wagon that he's hauling attached to the truck.
Yeah, and that's considered a bed portion still.
No, it's not. Except, like, maybe it, like, all reattaches together, but I'm saying is, like, you have the giant thing that's attached to the truck, and then you have the outside little thingy he's hauling.
Yeah, and that's still considered a bed hauler. So she's technically in a bed that's being hauled with the truck.
Okay.
Because she's lying in it like you would with the like a mm-hmm. butt of a truck.
So anyway, Wolverine leaves in his truck. Then he like hears something, and he finds her in the bed of the truck in the little trailer thingy, and he kicks her out. But he kind of lets her into his car because she's a cute little girl that needs help. And she tells him that her name is Rogue, or that he can call her Rogue. She tries to make small talk with Wolverine while eating some beef jerky. And I gotta admit, Rogue is a little bit judgy, and she has really no room to judge because she has no money, no home, no place to go. So she like takes off her gloves, and Logan tries to like grab the gloves and like grab her hand and like put them on the radiator. And she like, you know, freaks out and pulls her hand back because scary things happen when people touch her. Logan also, it should be noted, does not wear a seatbelt, which is really important when he gets flung through the front of the truck and out into the snow. And the van catches on fire. Logan's fine, but we see Sabretooth, even though he's never, I don't think, actually mentioned or called Sabretooth. So, like, our audience members that have not watched the animated series or read the comics are supposed to assume these people's names. Like, Toad's name isn't even mentioned until the end of the movie. So Sabretooth tries to fight with Logan. It's kind of unclear what the point of the fight is or what's going on. It seems like Sabretooth wants Wolverine. So Storm and Cyclops arrive and they rescue Rogue and Wolverine. And at this point, Wolverine is like passed out. Sabretooth, as it turns out, works for Magneto. And we see Toad, who just looks nothing like he did in the comics. And this is actually kind of cool. They redesigned the character because the actor they chose for the role was like more martial arts inclined. So they're like, okay, we don't need to make him all gross and bulky and quirky. We can just like redesign him, which is, I think they could have done more with the redesign, but you know, it was fine. So basically Magneto chastises Sabretooth for not bringing him what he wanted, but he sees like the dog tags. So it's kind, the implication seems to be that Wolverine was who Sabretooth was after, but it's never stated. Isn't that interesting? Ain't that something?
I mean, you can tell that McClellan, or that, you know, Magneto just wasn't pleased, because it's like,
yeah.
When he sees the dog tags, he's like, I'm keeping these.
And then Sabretooth takes them back, but... No, yeah, Magneto's still not happy, so he definitely was supposed to bring someone. So Magneto says something about a test at the UN before the UN summit. We cut to Wolverine on a slab, tended to by Dr. Gray. And he doesn't take well when she tries to stab him with a needle. He kind of hurts Jean, chokes her for a second, then runs out. He finds himself in the tunnel. We see the X uniforms kind of in the back. He steals a sweater because, you know, it's cold. And he hears Charles's voice inside his head, which leads him down into the main area of the school and all the way into Charles's classroom, which has like a secret entrance, but also a door. And there's like a class of kids. And it's physics. Good physics. He says that, you know, when this is like a school, there's like kids everywhere walking around. These kids are so important. So important. I am shaking my head. And we have a very brief cameo of a Kitty Pryde that does not have a permanent actress yet. Because who cares about Kitty, right? Anyway, there's a girl. She walks through walls. She walks through the door.
Well, let's be honest, though. At this point, they've already established at this point that the key characters of this film is Magneto, Professor X, Wolverine, and Rogue. They've already established that those are the four main characters. And then they're going to utilize, you know, as we see in Jean Grey.
I know. It's fine. But...
Yeah, so cameo for now, because when we get to the next film, Kitty Pryde does come into the next film. I believe. It's either and the next film or
she doesn't show up until X3. She's still a glorified cameo until X3. And even then, I will fight tooth and nail because this is just a terrible adaptation of Kitty Pryde. Anyway, separate conversation. Check back with us in two episodes after this. Anyway, let's see where we left off. Charles introduces himself and says that he's Charles Xavier, and they are in Westchester, New York. And then he meets Storm, Aurora Monroe, and I love how we get their names and their code names right away. And this is Scott Summers, also known as Scott. And he wants to know where Rogue is. He's like, Rogue's fine. Like, don't worry, she's in class. It's all good. And Wolverine's like, I want to check for myself. So Charles, like, I guess went, you know, loop-de-loop in his head and saw what a giant mess it was. Like, hey, so you're having memory issues. Let me see if I can help. So it is a school for mutants, and we know that Jean and Scott were former students who now teach. So does Storm. I don't really know if there's any other teachers at the school, but it seems kind of weird how a lot of the time 90% of the staff is gone, but whatever. We also have a really dorky cameo of just like a girl in a yellow jacket, which is supposed to be a nod to Jubilee. And we see Rogue, and then we see Pyro being Pyro, and Bobby, which is funny because like Pyro in the comics, I think, was just part of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, and he was not an ex-kid, but whatever. So he like plays with a fireball, and Bobby freezes the fireball while Storm is trying to give a lecture on the Roman Empire. And then he, like, Bobby introduces himself to Rogue and bids her a little flower, which in the present context of X-Men continuity of Bobby Drake is hilarious. Anyway, Charles says that the school and the powers already talked about, so, and he also says he met Eric at the age of 17. Well, I'm sure that'll come up again and won't be retconned or anything. Honestly, it would have been interesting to see a flashback to the two of them actually meeting. Because in the comics, in the original 60s comics, they meet in Israel, I think, when Charles goes to help Holocaust survivors deal with the trauma for those that have become, like, catatonic. So, at least I think that's how they met. Anyway. Would be cool to have explored that in a movie. Well, they do later on, but I mean, like, what circumstances let rich kid 17-year-old Charles to meet sole Holocaust survivor immigrant Eric Lencher? Anyway, Eric is basically very angry and very vengeful, and that the X-Men fight for humankind. And this is basically all explained to Wolverine while Charles gives him, like, a tour of the mansion. It's a nice school. They have, like, horses. They have, like, a stable. Four people is not enough staff to run the school. Like, that's really obvious. Like, who cooks the meals? Who, you know, takes care of the groundwork, which is very nice. And Taylor, like, there's a lot of things that is never explained. And this is just a general comment on X-Men in anything in general. Nothing is explained. So they ask, Wolverine's like, no, I'm gonna go. But Charles asks him for like 48 hours to find out what Magneto wanted with him. So they kind of assume that Wolverine is who Magneto is after. Interesting, isn't it? Senator Kelly, meanwhile, arrives to take a helicopter. It's kind of unclear where, I don't remember if they say where he was supposed to be going in his helicopter, but he definitely takes a government helicopter. And he's talking about the bill. I'm yawning. So as he arrives, there's like all of these like mutant-hating protesters going on. Like, yeah, Senator Kelly, get that Mutant Registration Act, because what could possibly go wrong? So he gets on the helicopter, and he's talking about how he finally has the votes, but it's going to be close. His assistant, Henry, kind of has like a creepy-ass look in his eye. Like, he's either going to murder Kelly or do something else with him. But it's because it's not actually Senator Kelly. It is Mystique, played by Rebecca Romijn. And let's see. The She has a weird voice in this scene, which doesn't carry over in the other films, which is probably a good thing. Anyway, so they steal a government helicopter and Kelly and go to Mutant Island. There's a lot of islands in this movie. So Wolverine agrees to the tests and flirts with Jean, because nothing I love more is than rehashing the same irritating love triangle from the comics and the cartoon. But since this is 2000, I won't include X-Men, Wolverine and the X-Men. Anyway, let's see. The MRI reveals that his claws and his entire skeleton is made out of adamantium. I don't know why I sounded like that, but basically it's a metal that can cut through anything. But he has a, and he the reason that this is successful, this is something that was done to him, and the reason that he's alive is because he has this amazing healing factor. And Jean makes a crack about how he could be older than you, Professor, which in fact he is. At this point, Wolverine would have been around like slightly less than 100, or like just about 100 years old. Charles isn't sure it's him Magneto wants, but he doesn't really have alternatives. Meanwhile, Toad watches Senator Kelly, who's like strapped to a chair, and Magneto talks to him. Magneto says that something that I forgot to note is there's a moment where Magneto is looking at the dog tags that Sabretooth brings in, and you actually see the numbers on his arm. In case you forgot, they're not going to mention it, but in case you forgot. Anyway, we're over here now. So Magneto talks to Kelly about how God works too slowly for him, and Kelly is afraid of mutants, that he's nothing to fear. And there's this like weird machine thing, and there's like a procedure, and it's very harmful to Magneto actually, but there's a wave that is released that engulfs Kelly. Back at the mansion, and there's a lot of back and forth like this throughout the movie. Wolverine gets a room, flirts with Jean some more. Then she tells him she's with Scott. Scott interrupts, and this is one of the most irritating love triangles in all of comics. Like, it just really is. I don't care. Even when the cartoon was airing, nobody cared. Honestly, Jean and Scott were like, still are, some of the most annoying characters. The only time they weren't annoying were in the latter two animated series, which was X-Men Evolution, which they were fine in, and Wolverine and the X-Men, in which Jean was very little in it, and Scott was whiny until somebody told him, slapped him a little bit, then he was fine. But yeah, I'm not a fan of love triangles. Scott basically hates Logan because, you know, he flirts with his Jean. Rogue can't sleep, and I guess she kind of hears Wolverine thrashing around or something. She goes to Wolverine, and he's having a nightmare, and she like wakes him up, and in the shock of it all, he stabs her. Oops, well, that's the end of the movie. But no, she survives because she's able to siphon off his energy to kickstart her healing factor, and then nearly kills Wolverine. It's fine. He feels guilty though, so they both kind of feel guilty. Let's see. The funny thing is, like, I guess it was the screaming, but like all the kids and all the staff show up. Like, this is a big ass mansion, but like half the school heard this. Like, really? Kelly's in a jail cell of sorts, and he kind of starts sliding through the bars. And then Eric and Sabretooth come in, and Kelly's gone, but he's like hanging off the side of the building. Sabretooth tried to get to him, but he can't, like, get a grip because he just, like, slimes away. Let's see. So then we get to the scene where Kelly, like, walks out of the water onto the beach and he's, like, fluctuating. And we see the Stanley cameo, which is just Stan staring at this man as he has a hot dog cart. So Bobby finds Rogue as she's like sitting on a bench and talks. He says some like funny things, like everybody thinks she's dangerous, like you never like take another mutant's powers or whatever it was. And I'm like, who, what? Or like, you never use your powers on another mutant. I'm like, are you kidding me? Did we not just see like five scenes of that? But whatever. Basically, like, it's very obviously not Bobby, and there's like a funny thing that's like with one of the lines that he says, the way he says it, I'm like, no teenager would sound like that. And that is because that is not Bobby, that is Misty. So basically he says that the professor is angry at her and he wants to leave her to leave, and instead of like, I don't know, checking with Storm or Jean or Scott or even Logan, she just runs because you can totally trust this random teenage boy you met like a day ago. And it's all right. She's an emotional teenager. It's understandable. So Charles wants to know what it is about Wolverine that I guess made him attractive to Magneto. I don't know. Maybe it's all the metal skeleton that he has. Like Magneto can do a lot with that. He's introduced to Cerebro, and the mutants have like a different brainwave, but it doesn't work on Magneto because he's like shielding himself from it. The reason that he knows how to do that is because he helped to build Cerebro. Basically they find out that Rogue is gone, and they find Rogue at a train station. Like Wolverine is like ready to go, but Charles tries to tell him no, because you know, Magneto's after you. So he sends Scott and Storm, but Logan steals Scott's bike and goes anyway. Bobby looks for Rogue, and like he and his friends pass in the hallway, and then we see like the doors open to like the other tunnels or whatever, and we see the other Bobby, in case you forgot it was the wrong Bobby. So Scott and Storm arrive at the train station, and Storm says she'll go and check with the Ticketmaster. Bobby 2.0 is Mystique and does something to Cerebro. She like inserts a tube that changes the water or something like that. And let's see, Logan finds Rogue in the train, inside a train, and tries to help. And, you know, Rogue still, like, keeps some parts of the people that she touches, so she has their memories. If anybody hasn't watched, there's a really good episode of X-Men the Animated Series, which actually features Ms. Marvel, Carol Danvers, that actually talks about why Rogue is able to fly. So, something to think about. Let's see. So Logan offers her some wisdom and says like, give these geeks one more chance or one more shot. And he promises to take care of her. That's kind of like a father-daughter moment, which is kind of nice. Scott has a cute moment, which was unscripted, but ends up being a really nice nod at society. So there's this kid who like can't stop looking at Scott because like this is Cyclops and he's a geek. And he's a comic fan or whatever, or a fan of the animated series. And Scott, like, turns around with his visor and smiles at the kid. And his mom looks at Scott and just, like, grabs her kids and leaves. Which is a nod to society, which is something all of the X-Men have this problem. They very rarely look at how society exists and functions in a world of mutants. We see itty-bitty little hints of it, but we don't really see it as a whole. There's no story about a mutant kid that goes to school every day. We see little things of it, but we don't really see the full how society works, how school works in a world where mutants exist, for the most part. Let's see. As Storm talks to the Ticketmaster, Sabretooth arrives and starts choking her. Toad steals Scott's visor, and Scott, as a result, ends up blasting the entire roof of the building. And Storm uses that to her advantage and brings lightning and literally shoots Sabretooth with a bolt of lightning. Because, you know, he deserves it. The train, so just as Rogue is about to agree to go with Logan, the train starts and they just kind of, you know, sit back and enjoy the ride. But then suddenly the train stops and is like ripped apart. And it's Magneto. And of course, Magneto can control Wolverine, which is always the funniest thing in any movie and the funniest thing about it is that Logan forgets that his skeleton is metal. Magneto can control the metal, which means Wolverine is the single worst character you could ever pit against Magneto. I still stand by this. Rogue yells for Magneto to stop. This is where it's revealed that Magneto is actually here for Rogue. She was always the target. They capture her and he knocks her out with like a syringe and they begin to leave. The cops arrive And Eric kind of shows his power. He, like, controls the cars, and then he steals all their guns and points it at them. Sabretooth ends up, like, choking Eric, but that's because Charles is the one controlling him. But Eric's helmet is you know, special, and it can, like, stop the psychic. Basically, Eric gives him an ultimatum, like, leave now, and, like, and I'll leave now, basically, but if you pursue this, I'm gonna kill everybody here. And he demonstrates this by almost killing a cop. Like, we hear the gunshot, but the bullet is, like, a second away from his forehead. But he says that a Holocaust, like, basically implies that another Holocaust is coming, and that the registration is just kind of the beginning of it. Charles lets him go, and, you know, Eric says that Charles made a mistake. Logan tries to go after Rogue, but Kelly arrives to see Jean. And Charles sees what happened to him. So the problem is Kelly's essentially dying because the mutation isn't natural. It's not like, basic, the way I understood it is that it's not like Magneto jump-started the X gene. It's more like he changed the chemistry of Kelly, but it can't sustain it. It's bullshit science to a degree, but that's the theory I'm going with.
What does our friend Ben say on Voices from the Grid?
That's not how science works! Well, actually, it is how science works, because if, like, it isn't there, like, I'm not a science major, never have been, but, like, if you change the chemistry of something, it can become unstable, right? If the molecules aren't put together in, like, the right way or something. So this is basically what happens to Kelly. And Magneto's ultimate plan becomes very obvious. It was kind of obvious from the beginning that he wants to turn people into mutants. How very lizard of him. Let's see. Where'd it go? They realize why Magneto needs Rogue. He's going to transfer his powers to Rogue's because, so Charles, like, sees inside Kelly's head and sees what happened. And he knows that the wave weakened Eric. So that means he needs Rogue to transfer his powers to her so she can do it, because he can't. Kelly kind of waters away after he has this very sweet moment with Storm. And Wolverine's kind of welcome to part of the team. Charles gets hurt using Cerebro because of whatever shenanigans Mystique did to it. Scott considers Charles as a father and will take care of the team and the school in the event that Charles dies, and he tells Charles this. Jean tries to use Cerebro. Scott tries to stop her. She gets hurt, but, like, she's not knocked out, but she gets what she needs. The evil bag of mutants, oops, evil gang of mutants arrives to Ellis Island the summit is at Ellis Island. They arrive at Liberty Island. Sabretooth and Toad take care of the guards, and Mystique got Rogue, Eric, and the machine out on a boat to the island. Eric says that he'll put the machine in place. He kind of talks to Rogue. Rogue's like, you're going to kill me. And, like, he's like, yep, that's what I'm going to do, but your sacrifice will be worth it. And he talks about how he arrived to America in 1949, which doesn't explain his accent is still British-esque. So, like, where'd you get the accent? Where'd you get the accent, Eric? Anyway. I guess between 1945 and 1949, he spent some time in England learning English. I don't know. Anyway, Toad takes sacrifice Rogue for mutant survival. So the gang gets, like, they're on their leather. They put on their leather suits, and Wolverine makes a comment like, "This is, like, really tight and everything." And Scott's like, "What do you prefer, yellow spandex?" Which is funny because they wore that in the comic. Well, Wolverine actually has a yellow spandex suit. It's not subtle. They get in the jet, and the jet takes off. Who's watching the kids at the school? Is it, like, Bobby and Pyro babysitting? Because there's, like, various age ranges of kids. Charles is in a coma. Like, who's monitoring Charles? What if he dies or goes into shock or something while you're on your mission? Like, who is watching these children? Why am I asking these questions? But these are the questions I need. Somebody needs to ask.
It ain't me. It ain't me. I ain't watching the kids. I'm still in high school at this. No, I'm actually just going into high school at this point. So it's definitely not me.
I'm like 7 years old. So like somebody should have been watching me. Anyway. Good guys arrive at Liberty Island. Storm gives them cover, but the cover can't really cover the like whoosh of the jet over water. So like Eric notices, and it was really obvious. It's like, yes, pay no attention to this random giant cloud of fog passing by at a very large speed. I'm sure no one noticed. So the good guys arrive at Liberty Island. Security alert cause. Oh, Wolverine walks through the metal detector at the statue, which has, I guess at the time, had a museum at the base. It doesn't anymore. But he walks through the metal detector and it starts beeping because his skeleton is made of metal. Let's see. Logan can smell something. We see them walk past the Statue of Liberty that has those yellow eyes. So he smells her, but he doesn't quite know where. Something isn't right. Wolverine can, in fact, smell Mystique. It's established in the comics that, like, even with a shapeshifter, Wolverine knows how people smell. So, like, a shapeshifter can't mimic that smell, I guess. Or because it's, like, on such a level that only Wolverine notices. It's a super sniffer. So he gets, Logan gets attacked by another Logan, and kind of separates him from the others. Toad ends up walking through Storm, Scott, and Jean. Like, dang, Toad is pretty good. They should recruit him for the X-Men. He like gets rid of Scott's visor and throws it somewhere or something, or blasts him throws him away. He like puts some of his like creepy slime stuff over Jean and she almost suffocates. It's a pretty good fight, actually. Again, like they're just thrashing them. Rebecca Romijn is absolutely awesome as Mystique, and the fight with Wolverine is actually pretty well choreographed. It was really fun to watch. Scott blasts off the goop on Jean. Storm comes back because he like throws her down an elevator shaft, or Toad throws her down an elevator shaft and then closes the door. And she's like, as she flies out, he's like, "Don't you people ever die?" The answer currently is no. They actually bring people back. But yeah, no one stays dead in comics except Uncle Ben and Batman's parents. And with the X-Men, you die, you get better. The degree to which you get better varies. The degree to which you get brought back, but you are brought back as brainwashed or are brainwashed and people think you're dead, it's a large percentage. Anyway, so I like the line of Storm as she's like, she's using the wind to push him back and everything. He like uses his tongue to attach to the railing. And she's like, "What do you call a toad that gets struck by lightning?" And as he like gets blasted away, she's like, "The same thing." Like right before she blasts him away, she says, "The same thing as everything else." It's like a dorky line, but it works. But let's see, where did we go here? Storm finds Logan, but this time he knows it's not Storm and stabs Mystique. I'm sure we'll never see her again. Logan proves that he's the real Logan by calling Scott a dick. Good move. But Magneto and Sabretooth arrive and they take away Scott's visor. They trap Wolverine so his hands are like inverted on into himself so that like if he tries to use his claws, he'll stab himself first. And Jean and Scott are put together in such a position that if Scott opens his eyes, no more Jean. And then Storm can't do anything, and Scott's like, "Jean, Storm, like, electrocute, light, you know, hit them with lightning." And and Eric's like, "Aren't you a student? Do you know what happens if you light up, like, if lightning strikes a copper, like, thing? Because copper is a conductor." So fireworks begin as the summit begins. They tell him that Kelly died. He kind of starts going on a bad guy lament, and Scott says, "You're not as righteous as you think you are." Logan stabs himself to cut through the back of the metal so that he can get out, and he attacks Wolverine, Sabretooth. Magneto goes through with the transfer of powers, and the bubble thingy begins to form. Logan gets his dog tags back and also steals Scott's visor, and the fight is pretty cool, except for one moment where Logan is trying to hold on to what I guess is the Statue of Liberty's like headband, and it is the single worst CGI moment in this entire movie. It's just so obviously bad. Let's see here. So they get the, using Logan throws the visor, Jean uses her powers to put it back and tells Scott to shoot at the exact moment so that they can be released. Oh, and Sabretooth gets blasted off again. Storm launches Wolverine with the wind, and Jean stabilizes him so that they can get to the torch. That's the English word. They need to get to the torch where the machine is. So, like, they literally just destroy the Statue of Liberty. Ugh, the X-Men ruined everything. Anyway. So, Jean steadies him with her powers as the wind hurls him. And again, Magneto can control metal. You should have just gone with Cyclops. Like, why? But the idea was to send Wolverine, and in case that didn't work, you could just use Scott. But Scott manages to but Magneto, despite being weakened, is able to hold Logan off, because it's a lot of metal, as he's trying to cut through the machine to free Rogue, whose hair is slowly turning white from the machine's energy. And you see people from the summit running away. And finally, Scott blasts something and it hits Magneto, freeing Wolverine so he can do the snick snick and free Rogue. So the police start arriving. Logan saves Rogue, and he gives her his healing factor so that she can survive, and nearly dies in the process. Mystique by the time the police arrive, Mystique is alive somehow and shapeshifts into a security guard. The X-Men leave. Charles wakes up. He's fine. We're never really given an explanation as to what happened to him and why it took him so long to wake up, but that's fine. Logan's healing up nicely. He's feeling better knowing Rogue is fine. Apparently some of Rogue's Logan's personality traits transferred to Rogue, which makes sense. So that would have been really funny to see. More Scott and Jean stuff. Logan gets information from Charles about an old lab at a base at Alkaline Lake. So maybe there's something there for Logan to get some answers. Mystique is pretending to be Robert Kelly and pulls him back from supporting the Mutant Registration Act. Logan heads out, but not before he says goodbye to Rogue. He gives her his dog tag and they have a cute moment, like, this place will be good for her. Logan leaves. And we see Eric is in a plastic prison, and he and Charles play chess, and Charles checkmates Eric. And apparently this is something that's been happening over the last few days, of him visiting Eric and playing chess, and Charles keeps visiting because he's searching for hope. But Magneto tells him that war is coming, and that he's going to be on the right side of it, and that Charles will be there to stop him. And that's the final... that's the end of the film, essentially. There's a subtle nod throughout the film to the original X-Men the Animated Series theme, which was kind of fun. But I gotta say, watching this movie literally 20 years after it came out, it's okay. And I don't mean the special effects and everything. The effects in the film are solid. The plot is very basic, but I will give it credit for the fact that this is the only movie in the franchise that is not in any way directly based off of a comic book. Obviously it's based off a comic book, but there's no specific storyline that they are borrowing from the comics, whereas the other films borrow from various elements of the comics. and various different comics to, especially the latter films, really borrow heavily from the comics and manage to screw up the comics. But we will talk about when we get there. So a couple of thoughts overall in this movie. I'm going to go back here to my notes. I think overall the movie's okay. The acting is decent. The actors definitely improve as they get into their role. I think for some reason the movie felt kind of rushed to me. I don't really know why, but let's see what else I have. So the movie was directed by Bryan Singer. Like we mentioned when we talked about the original, like the first like Iron Man film and the Hulk and Thor and Captain America, this was something that was in the back burner for a while. They'd been trying to do it for a very long time. Apparently there was one version of this film which would have seen Bob Hoskins as Wolverine. Michael, like, come on, that would have been awesome.
I don't know how that would work.
It would be perfect. You give him a wig. You make him all... He can play gruff character. He could have played gruff character.
But he would be too old by that point.
It's 2000, and Wolverine's not supposed to be a spring chicken.
Hold on. Let me look at something real quick.
I think it would have been cool to see him as Wolverine, because first, I think that would have been a more, like, comic book accurate version, since Wolverine is only 5'3 and not, you know, toned and, you know, all Hugh Jackman-y. So that would have been an interesting take. I would have liked
that.
So
Bob Hoskins was born in 1942. So he would have already been, he would have been 58 years old when X-Men came out. There's no way he could have played Wolverine.
I think they still could have gotten somebody that fit the character a little bit better. But I like Hugh Jackman. I think he's a great actor. Obviously, he's had great success in his career as a result of being introduced as Wolverine in these X-Men films. But it's just like, I don't know. It's not really Wolverine. It's a version of Wolverine. But this is interesting. Angela Bassett as Storm. Like, that I would have loved to see. Because, honestly, I think Angela Bassett is, first of all, gorgeous and an incredible actress. And she could have done it. She would have been great. She would have been a great Storm. I would, like, just watching her in Black Panther with, like, the white hair. I was like, man, she would have been a cool Storm. I would have enjoyed that. That's definitely a casting I could have lived with. I really like it. I like Angela Bassett a lot. She's a great actress. That is, I think I said that multiple times in the Black Panther review, but I stand by it. She's amazing. Apparently, there was Bigelow with Cameron as producers. The only movie that doesn't borrow directly from the comic book storyline. Only film where Storm has some form of an accent. I guess it was supposed to be a Kenyan accent. I think Halle Berry should have really consulted a dialect coach. I guess let's talk about the casting of this film. I'm going to pull up the cast list here so we can talk about the actors. I think there's a lot of great actors here. You have Sir Patrick Stewart is Xavier. Like, even looking at, like, the original X-Men, the animated series, like, he looks like Charles Xavier. Ian McKellen, I think, worked well. I think Michael Fassbender was better as Magneto, but I think this is also like in the case of Halle Berry, where they kind of settle into the role a little bit more, and there's a lot of things with Eric that are still left to be unsaid. So I look forward to maybe seeing another actor play Magneto, because Magneto is one of my favorite characters. Halle Berry, we kind of already talked about. Her wig was terrible in this movie. I think her wig improves in the next film, but this is a terrible wig. Famke Jensen as Jean Grey was amazing. She was equal parts frustrating, annoying, and charming and helpful. That is Jean Grey to a T, so great job. But I think it can be said for all these actors, with maybe Sir Patrick Stewart is the exception because he doesn't really need to fit into the role, but they grow into the roles over time, which is pretty amazing to see. You definitely see the change and the improvement. And then you have James Marsden as Cyclops, which was, I don't know his acting career very well. I don't think he ever quite fit in as Cyclops, but he definitely played him like he had a stick up his butt. And that is rule number one when playing Scott Summers. You've got to remember the stick. It's a pole, but you know. Bruce Davidson as Senator Kelly did a fine job. I think they could have like developed Senator Kelly a little bit more, because they had him and then they just kind of killed him off in the movie. There's a lot more they could have done with that. Rebecca Romijn.
So real quick, I want to go back to James Marsden real quick.
Go for it.
So for James Marsden pre X-Men, he did some appearances in Saved by the Bell, The New Class.
Never watched that.
The Nanny.
Oh, yeah. He played the waiter kid. Yeah. That falls in love with, that like dates
girls. Yeah, he played Eddie.
Yep, Eddie the waiter.
Yeah, and then he did an appearance in Party of Five, Touched by an Angel.
I haven't seen that.
Let's see here.
Okay, so this is like
he did a voice in Extreme Ghostbusters.
And okay, then, so this is like his first big blockbuster movie.
Yeah, because after X-Men, which was his first true big blockbuster film, he ended up playing John Wilkes Booth in Zoolander. He did Ally McBeal. He did The Notebook. Superman Returns as Richard White.
That was a waste.
He was in Hairspray.
Yes, he was.
Enchanted.
Yep.
27 Dresses.
All right, we don't have to go through his entire IMDb. We get it. He had a decent movie career afterwards.
Yeah, he did pretty decent for himself.
Like I said, the first rule of playing Scott Summers is the stick up his butt.
And then he was also Tom in Sonic the Hedgehog.
There's a joke that was going around when the Sonic movie came out that James Marsden has made his career playing side-by-side animals. So the first was like in Hop, where he plays next to a bunny. Then you have Sonic the Hedgehog, who's a hedgehog. And then you have Wolverine. I love that meme. That was the best meme. That is the only successful part of 2020, is that meme. Anyway, Ray Park played Toad, and he did a really good job. That was the first time I actually enjoyed seeing Toad in anything. First and only. Anna Paquin as Rogue was... Again, I think the hard part is like when you have an ensemble cast is kind of balancing the characters. And I think it would have been nice to see a little bit more of her interacting with Storm and Jean and Scott, because we don't really see her talk to anybody really, except Bobby, sort of, Magneto and Wolverine. Like, I don't remember a single conversation she has with Charles, Jean, Scott, or Storm, because I don't think she does. Unless you count being in a class with Storm, which I don't. Apparently, Bryan Singer believed comic books were unintelligent literature. But after reading the comics and the X-Men, the animated series, changed his mind and tried. But despite this, he actually tried to ban comic books on set. Which actually explains a lot. Because, like, some of the cast read them anyway, but what I love that Marvel does, and again, this is a Fox film, but Marvel gives you reading material. Marvel gives you homework. Who was it? I don't remember. Somebody was, like, talking about casting and being cast for a Marvel role. This is the I think it was actually Sir Patrick Stewart who said that this was playing Charles Xavier was the first role we had to play where you had to like have homework to read about Charles Xavier. But it's interesting that like some actors, it seems, did that and some didn't, or to what extent. But what I like that Marvel does is that they give you homework. They give you a little stack of reading material. They don't give you everything because they don't want your... Well,
I think it was Elizabeth Olsen who actually came out and said that, because when she first got casted as Wanda, they gave her, like, here's 10 comic books. We want you to read these 10 comic books.
And then she asked for more.
Yeah. So it was actually her that did it, because under Fox with the X-Men movies, they didn't do that.
So. Yeah, which I think... kind of explains a lot with the X-Men films. But you can also
kind of tell with certain actors who read them anyways.
Yeah.
Because, like, you can kind of tell that, yeah, you can kind of tell it's like, well, I'm going to read the comic books anyways because I'm a freaking nerd, so.
Like, you can tell Sir Patrick Stewart really read them. I think his performance as Charles Xavier is... like, Charles is really a minor character in this film, but it's a very relaxed portrayal. It's honest and it's really well, but like, you can tell he's not struggling or anything to find Charles Xavier. For other actors, they definitely grow into it. But I guess Bryan Singer's logic was like, he didn't want the comics to influence like their portrayals, but the lack of comics ended up influencing their portrayals. So that's kind of a mistake on Singer's part. And Singer and the word mistake is something we'll be coming back to a lot. There's probably a lot of other things in the IMDb trivia and fun facts that I missed, but those are kind of the things that I really took away. I think it holds up if you watch it when you're younger than when you're older. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Not every movie is, you know, the best thing to watch as an adult. Some movies are just meant for kids. And I think this one was PG-13, but there's really nothing in here that a kid watching it, you know, if it had a PG rating, it would be fine. Like, the only really, like, big PG-13 thing is, like, Wolverine calls Scott a dick.
Pretty much.
That's really it. And maybe a little bit of the blood and gore, but it wasn't that much. Like, PG's a fine. Like, if Gremlins can be PG, this can be PG. So as we move forward in our X-Men journey, we will see that other films borrow heavily from various aspects of the comics. Some to at least commercial success, and others to the end, but mostly to the bane of my existence.
Yeah. But and one of the other plans is to get through these 11 movies. So by the time we're done with these movies, we will be ready for
WandaVision!
Exactly. Because I believe the next thing we're actually going to do is we're going to do as new episodes get released of WandaVision, we're going to be doing breakdowns of every episode.
Yes, we will be, because I will be fan... I'm just going to be, like... I've read most of the major storylines that Wanda was in. So, like, Scarlet Witch and Vision comics, some stuff with her in the Avengers, Disassembled, House of M, Children's Crusade, I've probably spent way too much time in her wiki page, so this will be a lot of fun. I'm excited and terrified, and I will be comparing it to the comics more than Mike, but I will be doing a lot of that, and I have no shame. But I'm excited. I think it'll be good. I'm really, really psyched to see it. But yeah, let us hope that everything works out the way it's supposed to, because I am back in school, and things happen, but I will try my darndest, my hardest, to make sure that we are consistent with our movie recordings and all of my homework, and that we can record the rest of these episodes. So,
because we've pushed this episode back by 3 weeks.
Yes, we did, and that was my fault. I fully admit that. I take ownership of that.
Yeah.
So, with that, Mike, where can the people find you on the social medias?
You can find me on Twitter at thelindenbaum75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions, Twitch. Yes, I'm on Twitch a lot more. twitch.tv/themichaelx75. I play video games. I relax. It's fun. Come join me. Laugh at me. I suck. It's okay. And then, of course, everything else is on txhthockey.com, where you can find Voices from the Grid, Nerdy Notions, TXHT Experience, although that's kind of shelved right now because we don't have conventions. So, yeah. But do stay tuned. Do stay tuned because DerpyCon, which is Halloween weekend, we will have a panel for Voices from the Grid. And Ben and I will also be doing the pro wrestling talk for DerpyCon as well. So we got some panels coming up. It's weird saying that when you're actually not there. And we recorded it like 2 months in advance. Yeah, about a month and a half.
All right, whatever. And for me, of course, you can find me on geekgirl101.tumblr.com, Geeky Captain on Instagram, Geeky Kaplan on Twitter. I've sacrificed my soul. Well, I didn't have one anyway. And I got a Twitter.
Oh, you're barely on it anyways. You're just there for Voices from the Grid.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I post comic book stuff. I retweet things. And of course, you can find my comic book rants. I say that as I stare at my Empire comics. You can find some of my selected comic book reviews of comics that are currently coming out at geekycaptainwrites.wordpress.com. And keep an eye out as I plan to review Marvel's Outlawed once the whole thing comes out, to gauge how well they did this storyline. So with that, thank you so much for tuning in, and please catch us next time as we see if the X-Men can really stand united.